Dear Shooter, those sneaky little hobbitses at the ATF are changing the rules yet again. By redefining what it means to engage in business is a sure way to turn more of us into felons until this gets swatted down by the courts.
It's not about protecting the stupid. It's just, it is what it is.
I don't know if you know this, but I'm a self-identifying llama. it's because I have a quick temper and I like to spit.
You are not safe and you are not sacred and you're both liars.
We're talking about firearms, y'all.
Keep it clean.
I can hide one under there.
One what? I want to know.
I look like I got ran over by a paint truck on the way to Sherwin-Williams and then backed over by the short bus.
You know, let's talk about the modern trends in transsexual transitions.
Welcome to the Dear Shooter podcast. Dear Shooter is brought to you by WyoTech, empowerment through self-reliance, and by Lucid Optics, on target, under budget.
You know, let's talk about the ATF, and if I'm understanding this right, they are redefining some definitions, and if I really understand this correctly, there's not even a comment period on this thing.
No, they said that they've already had that period, and it's come and gone, and this law, or rule, I shouldn't get that right, this rule will be taking effect relatively soon. Takes effect... Yeah, on April 10th, they brought out this new rule, and it will be taking effect.
I thought it was 30 days from publication.
Yep. That was something like, yeah.
30 days from publication. So, yeah, next May.
So, okay, May 10th. All right. So, happy Thursday, everyone. And, we've joined the crew again. We got Brandy, Jason. and we're sitting here scratching our heads trying to wrap brains around what are they trying to accomplish here?
Yeah, they're trying to define certain things where they think that they're super smart people and they're going to close that gun show loophole, which hasn't been a loophole forever. But they're defining things like, what is a dealer? What is profit? What is the sale? The definition of all that. None of that really means anything because we all know what that stuff is. They're citing that, you know, all this new whiz-bang technology like the internet and 3D printers has changed the landscape, and you know they weren't prepared to regulate such things, which I agree. They weren't prepared.
They shouldn't be regulating it anyway.
No argument from me. So it doesn't really have any teeth until you get down to the BSCA's definition that just changed of what is engaging in the business of.
Yeah.
Now, being a dealer is one thing. All of us that are FFLs, it doesn't do anything to you. You already have the licensing. You're recognized as someone who actively markets, actively engages in the sale thereof firearms.
But it screws me.
Well, you're not an FFL.
Right.
And with the engaging of business definition, it changes how they're looking at people who put significant effort into marketing and the sale thereof. Now, you are in education.
Mm-hmm.
You are a trainer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some of your classes, as a package deal, come with a firearm.
That's right.
So, technically, you spend effort marketing and engaging in the sale of your class, which technically comes with a firearm.
Right.
Now, from a legal perspective, every one of your students' transactions of that class has a FFL-controlled component. Not you, right? But you do collect the money.
I do. And then the transfer is done through an FFL.
Correct.
As far as the ATF is concerned, all those transfers are legal up until this.
Right. So up until now, as of May 10th, you didn't have to be an FFL because you were running your transfers through a legal FFL. Well,
right.
Now they have defined you and your activities thereof as a, engaged in the business of selling firearms, which technically makes you a dealer.
Right.
I don't agree with that, and I don't think they thought this through.
I don't think they did either.
But by this definition, unless it gets amended before it gets published here on the 10th, you may be looking at getting an FFL.
Yeah, and I don't foresee this thing getting amended if they're already done with public comment.
Yeah, it's done. It's done. Published. The 10th was several days ago, y'all.
Well, and yeah, May, April 10th is when it was published.
Well, right,
but no,
May
that's
10th
when it
goes into effect.
That's when it goes into effect. They're not amending anything. They're just giving you 30 days to comply.
And 30 days is also their 30 days to figure out if there's any bugs. And there always is. They always fix stuff.
Yeah, this is.
But. They do very clearly address, private sales. If you were buying a gift for, say, a family member,
right?
That's not in the what they would consider a dealer sale.
So, realistically, this doesn't change anything other than somebody like me, because I'm collecting money, even though the transfer is a legal transfer through an FFL, but because I'm not a licensed FFL, I get hosed.
Well, if you look at the definition, it actually hits a lot of folks.
Yeah.
The firearms industry overall is comprised of a whole bunch of FFLs, manufacturers, marketing people, and influencers that have a public face. These folks accept money in the promotion and substantial actions thereof gaining firearm sales.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's going to affect all of them because technically, by the definition, they are all engaged in the business of selling firearms.
So we're talking people like Tun Jones.
Correct.
And E. Flanagan. Correct. Kevin Crichton.
So this is going to hit gun riders.
It's going to hit
influencers.
It's also, Michael Bain.
Anybody that has a coupon code.
If they receive a profit, a pensionary gain, right? In the substantial act of gaining a sale of a firearm, marketing, sales, promotion thereof.
So, okay, hear this, gun riders.
Yeah, you're being compensated.
Hurry up and get your 10 best concealed carry guns article done before May 10th.
This is going to change the landscape of how the firearms industry looks at business. Because everybody that I can think of is engaged in the business thereof in some way or fashion.
That's how we make our money. I mean, one of the responsibilities that I have on the PDN training tour is to promote firearms and accessories, that because they're the sponsors. My job as an educator is to promote this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Exactly right. And the fact that you do sell a class that comes with a firearm where the cost is included in the class.
Right.
You made the gain, and you made substantial effort to market that class,
uh-huh.
which puts you in the category engaged in the business. So, this is going to change a lot of things.
So, I guess we need an FFL.
Well, and I need to start having some conversations with my suppliers.
Well, and since most of your stuff goes through my FFL,
mm-hmm.
I think, realistically, it's probably easier, more economical if we were to put you as a responsible party on our FFL.
But they changed definition of that as well.
They did.
Right. But you have to be connected to the business thereof. And so if you were, I guess, engaged in the business of, I guess it would be your discretion, whether you have your own, which it's not incredibly egregious. There is a lot of hoops to go through when you get checked out three ways to Sunday. But
oh, yeah, well.
At the end of the day,
I've been through that anal probe several times.
Yeah, it is not horrible.
Don't you have to sell? Not that we'd have a problem with it, but so many firearms a year to get your own FFL because they're not just granting everybody FFL.
Yeah, because what was it? 8 or 10 years ago, they tried to eliminate that kitchen table firearms dealer. They had an FFL, but they didn't have a brick and mortar, so they were shutting them down.
Yeah, that was an issue. And some distributors still, if you don't have a storefront,
mm-hmm.
You can't set up an account even if you do have an FFL.
Right. at the end of the day, though, and you were explaining this definition to me, and it was, you know, they defined it as the reason why you were selling it, the reason why you were buying it, what the profit money was going to. I mean, they go into that kind of definition, whether it was to pay off medical bills or tuition or some, you know, incurred expense that really wasn't your fault or whatever, or if it was to go on a vacation or buy a sports car or this, that. It goes back to what the hell business is it of theirs?
It's really not. And what you're talking about is they were attempting to define the term occasional sale.
Yeah.
Not defined as engaged in the business thereof. So let's say I want to go to Jamaica on a trip, mm-hmm. right? And I'm not liquid enough to be able to do that, so I pull a couple guns out of the safe. I offer them up for sale. I generate the cash I need to go on my trip.
Right.
And that does not qualify as engaged in the business of. That is what they would consider an occasional hobby sale.
And they're really kind of hazy on that definition, because where do they draw the line? They don't really define that.
Substantial effort to market and gain a profit.
Well, there's substantial effort to market anything. I mean, you're trying to sell a camper right now, and you're like you're making yourself crazy trying to figure out where and who to market this stupid thing to. This you're putting substantial effort into that.
And I'm not a camper dealer.
Right. Okay. But anytime you're trying to sell something, garage sale, I mean, there is what could be considered substantial effort put forth to market that.
Right, and they address that as regular. So it's not the occasional, the regular effort. So in your case, it would be
more regular than
a couple classes a year.
I'll bet you one class would
one class would because that's 6 to 10.
6 to 10 people, yeah. So, yep. I mean, by that volume, uh-huh. you fall in the engaged in business thereof.
Right.
The occasional, like one or two rifles to finance that trip, they're not going to call that the thing.
No, but I do think that they need to be a little clearer with that definition, or they need to go back and rule in some exemptions for those of us that we do what we do in the firearms industry, because we do profit from the sale of firearms, even if indirectly.
Well, it comes down to if you do it on a regular basis, right?
But it doesn't matter. And under their definition, it doesn't matter if I'm profiting directly or indirectly from that sale if I'm doing marketing.
Yeah. Say he wrote four articles this year on, say, the PD-10. That is marketing. Uh-huh. They pay him to write an article. Now, it's not as much as if he sells a firearm, but he gets paid to do that.
Well, if you did substantial effort in the effort there of making a sale on a firearm, and you are doing it on a regular basis and getting paid for it,
yes,
you fit the definitions that they just put out,
right,
as engaged in the business thereof.
And that doesn't even touch what we do with the package classes.
Correct.
What's that do to like PDN Network and GunBroker.com?
It's going to open a big old bag of worms. Those folks that have been flying under the radar selling guns, even if they do send it to an FFL for final transfer, they made the profit of a regular effort to sell firearms.
Well, and I'm going to challenge you a little bit on that, in the fact that we're not even trying to fly under the radar. We're just doing what we do.
I agree with you. With this new rule.
I know.
Now, they didn't go after private sales completely. They very, very clearly say that you can have a private sale. You can go buy a gun for a family member as long as it's not interstate commerce.
Right.
You can do that. If it has to cross a state line for possession, then you should send it to an FFL. So, I mean, they're clarifying all of that, but they are going to be cracking down on those folks who are regularly engaged in the business of selling firearms, and their definition comes down to it's going to be agent discretion.
But they're regular. Okay, so what makes you regular? Is it quantity or is it time frame? Because, say,
they address both.
Jason and I pass away. Mm-hmm. And say the children do not want our firearms. We have an obscene amount of firearms. The children go to sell those out. It's
how
a death
dare you?
Sale.
Obscene amount?
Well, at the end of the day, they also address estate sales and auctioneers, where they are exempt from those types of rulings. Now, most auctioneers, if they're handling a large volume of firearms in the estate, they bring in an FFL to handle those transactions.
Right.
And they do address that in this, in the question and answer side of things. So your case wouldn't necessarily put your children in that category of engaged in the business of.
I just think they're going to have a really, really hard time with enforcement with this when the actual transfers are still legal, going through an FFL, 4473, all that. At the end of the day, if the transfer is above board, I think they're going to have a really hard time with this.
With the definition in place, it opens the door so they can identify somebody who's making money and tax them accordingly.
But they
I'm already taxed.
Yeah, they purchased this firearm.
I get it.
With their own money. They,
but if
you
they
know,
deem you.
They've been taxed on it.
As somebody that's engaged in the business of selling firearms and you are not a licensed FFL, they can come get you.
And when does the ATF control our taxes?
Well, they make rules all the time that has tax implications. They don't make laws. They make rules. And Title 26 is the only thing that gives them the authority that they've got. So call your representatives and get this thing repealed.
Yeah, we're going to have to because, I mean, I already pay taxes.
Yeah.
I'm paying my business taxes. I'm paying my personal taxes.
He's getting taxed on the firearms he sells.
Right.
From a sales tax perspective,
yes.
Sure. Yep.
So,
But he wouldn't get his income tax on it because engaged in business, he wouldn't claim that.
Yes, he would,
yes,
because
I do.
It's in WyoTac.
Yes, the company does claim those sales.
Okay.
I have to account for them.
Sure.
I mean, that's just standard accounting practices.
Well.
So I am paying taxes on those firearms.
I pulled my crystal ball out, and it says that you're probably going to see a firearms tax come down the pipe in the next couple of years.
Well, yeah, that's exactly.
Because this is a foundational document for something like that.
Okay, so we need to hurry up and get this ruled unconstitutional.
It's an infringement. It's an overreach. It doesn't address the sales of firearms to anybody that is mentally ill or a felon.
Right, the problem.
What they're addressing is the definition of who's engaged in the business for selling a firearm. That's how they're defining who's a dealer now. Those of us who are already FFLs, again, this doesn't touch us. There's really no real thing here that has anything that's different than I was doing yesterday.
Other than responsible party and owner's personal collection.
It's just redefining those things. We still handle them the same way with the 4473.
So no changes.
Our deposition book doesn't change. It's the same thing for us moving forward. The definition is just a little bit more wordy.
Okay. So, all right.
How do they know someone turns into a firearm to me? They do not have access to my books. I take their driver's license. They've turned in a firearm to me, and I'm re-releasing it. How do they know that's even a sale?
All right, let's get into that. But first,
until they audit you, they can't.
Before we get into that, I need a bourbon and probably an aspirin.
The 10th Mountain Whiskey and Spirit Company, based in Vail, Colorado, high up in the Rocky Mountains. 10th Mountain is a tribute company to the legendary 10th Mountain Division. Maker of fine spirits, including bourbon, rye, and vodka, as well as being a generous supporter of the shooting sports and veterans charities. Support those that support us, and to make it easier, 10th Mountain is offering our listeners a discount. Just enter Dear Shooter at checkout for 10% off. 10th Mountain Whiskey and Spirits Company, whiskey worth fighting for.
So, yeah, this is a bag of worms.
Well, and it's even worse the more question and answer you read here. Question, does the final rule require every private sale of a firearm to be processed through a licensed dealer? Valid question. Answer, no. Individuals may continue to make interstate private sales without a license provided they do not rise to the level of being engaged in the business.
But what's that line?
Well, there's a volume and a regularity that the ATF agent gets to hold at his discretion.
And that's therein lies the problem.
How do they know?
You have to hit their radar as a gun runner, I guess. I don't know.
Okay. How do they define that? I mean,
again,
every Friends of the NRA banquet I've ever been to, and the NRA reps are not responsible parties on their FFLs.
No.
They have a local FFL that handles the transfers of all their firearms. However, the NRA field rep, on a regular basis, sometimes twice a week, engages in the substantial effort to market and sell firearms as a fundraising activity.
Wait a minute. Okay, so, all right, so all
it's
of
not just Friends of NRA. There's no, so many fundraisers that have firearms.
Oh, my God.
Pick a fundraiser.
Turkeys.
They all use firearms.
Muleys.
Pick one. They all use it.
Oh, okay, so here's your class action right there.
Because now you're talking all of those reps for all of those charity
substantial
divisions.
Substantial effort and regularity
are, now,
are all in line.
Yes.
Wow, I hadn't even thought about that. But, wow, that's huge.
There's a, I mean, the NRA's foundation, I know that they, in their heyday a couple of years ago, that was a $35 million a year business.
Right.
That's regular and substantial effort.
That would be in the, yeah. But, no, wait. I know for a fact that the Friends of the NRA has an FFL.
But the NRA field reps at each state
they
are
do
not,
not
responsible
yeah,
parties.
Don't.
And they're the ones that actually hang their butt out on the line every week doing it.
And how many FNRA events are there nationwide, ballpark?
600.
Well, yeah, well, it's 720
year?
As of the last charter.
Okay. And there's there's what, 40 reps?
Maybe.
Okay.
There's several states that have one guy.
Right. So, but you've got, so you've got 40 guys out there that you're exactly right, are hanging their butt out. They're doing the exact same thing that I'm doing. Now, they benefit financially because they draw a salary from the Friends of the NRA.
But wait, they have an auctioneer involved.
He's exempt.
Exactly.
He's
the auctioneers. The auctioneers are actually doing the selling at the event. So that's an exempt thing. And the FFL is handling the background checks. And he's not getting paid to market.
The definition of engaged in business is the substantial and regular effort.
What about what happens to all those volunteers on those committees? Because they
profit.
Okay.
Nobody gets paid. Sometimes you get your dinner.
Volunteers clear because they don't profit.
Okay, but still, if you're talking about ATF agent discretion, there's somebody that's going to go and try and push the envelope on this.
No, I'm wondering about those charities that don't have it. Like, the FNRA has a corporate FFL, okay? But some of the other charities, they run through our FFL.
Right.
I mean, Muleys does, but this YOGO fund does not. We are the standing FFL.
Yeah, they handle firearms a lot. That's going to change how they're able to do business. I think most of the conservation groups that I know of have a corporate FFL. But again, they're paid people are not responsible parties on that FFL.
Right.
So that's that substantial effort, and they do make a profit from that effort.
Right.
Regularity.
And you've got, you've got your responsible parties for the FFL, but that's not typically the marketing guy.
No, it's probably not.
And he's the one that's out there pushing all
of
this.
So what about their sales team and their marketing team?
It all has to be reviewed now with this new rule.
Okay, so I don't think they thought of everything in this rule because
I am
marketing. I'm Logan. All I do is make ads for web, for print. I do marketing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I am now busted under this because I work for a firearm manufacturer.
Yeah. The potential's there. It is.
And it's like you say, the problem is that agent discretion. But that's, again, why I say I think they're going to have a hard time enforcing any of this, especially when the transfers themselves are going through a licensed FFL.
True. And again, because I'm not a lawyer. I'm reading the rule and the question and answer on the ATF.gov website. And as I'm reading this, there is a lot of umbrella definition being done. And they're doing it to try and close down the private sale at a gun show to people you don't necessarily know across state lines. I get it.
Well, and let me throw this out, because we know the ATF and the government in general is kind of famous for this. They define things in a vague fashion and give discretion and all of these things as a feature in an effort to make people afraid to get into the gun industry.
I could see where that could be construed that way, sure. Yeah.
That's a really weak scare tactic, y'all.
Well, it is and it's not. I mean, look at somebody like me. I mean, I make substantial money selling these packages. What am I going to have to do here to keep myself in the clear and out of ATF jail?
Yeah, no, they go on to try and define what's profit and what's the sale and who's exempt and who's not. And in one statement, they say that the auctioneer isn't exempt. The other statement, they say it depends on how much regularity and profit he makes. And it's they speak in circles in the question and answer side of things. And the rule is written in such a poor way that you can't read it without a lawyer. But on its face, that engaged in business is the crux of what they're trying to attempt to define as a dealer. And if you're a dealer, they really want you to have an FFL.
What does that do for them? What? Okay, so
it makes a list of those folks engaging in the business,
right,
of selling firearms.
And from a monetary standpoint, what's it cost to maintain an FFL every year? Class one.
I think my renewal's $150 after my first initial. So it's not horribly.
So it's not prohibitive.
No.
But
there's a lot of regulatory and hoops you got to jump through.
Okay, but if they do that and they force this on, let's call it, 100,000 people, because we know that the firearms, especially the marketing side of it, there's that many people.
Easily.
If all of them have to do that, you're, you know, $1.5 billion.
You'll lose half your industry first.
Right. Which, to me, is a feature.
Sure.
Don't underestimate your enemy, people. And call me conspiracy theorist, but too much of this stuff is going on.
They all know, well, you're a conspiracy theorist.
I know they
do. I got notified of this thing as a rule change as a licensed FFL.
And when were you notified?
It came across my desk in the past couple days.
Right. So
after it was published.
After the comment period, after anybody had any time to address this and fight it and go, hey, ATF, you're being dumb.
Right.
So they opened comments secretly.
Right.
Oh, and only to people they wanted comments from.
I would fully be prepared to tell you out loud that they met the requirement for them to publish a rule that is supposed to be acted and enforced in 30 days.
And they handpicked them.
Oh, I'm sure they probably did. But they met the requirement. They are not that dumb.
Right. But they met that requirement not making this thing truly public.
And I would agree that the outside of that, the reason I even said anything was I found out about it because it came across my desk as a license holder.
Uh-huh.
You didn't find out about it until you and I talked.
Right.
How many folks have access to an FFL and talk on a regular basis that way?
Yeah, no, I mean, probably not a lot.
Your training community is going to be a problem. Yeah.
How many FFLs talk to their guys that they hang out with like that about business like that?
Right.
So it's still a secret rule in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. And therein lies a big problem.
Because your common everyday civilian doesn't know.
Right. And we always say, well, the ignorance of the law is not a defense. But the fact is, if they don't make it to where people know that there's a rule change, which there's a criminal penalty attached to this.
Can't read your mind, y'all.
Right. I'm curious to see what happens with this.
We'll probably see a lot of folks get pulled aside and say, you know what? You're engaged in the business. You need to have a license or you can't continue.
Right. I think some Congress people are going to have some phone calls made in this next 30 days.
I hope so.
I will be making some calls tomorrow because this is ridiculous.
As is most rules, I find the ATF decides to publish from a secret place.
Right.
They enforce them. They ruin somebody's life. And then later it's found unconstitutional. And they just kind of, they don't even say my bad. They just go quiet.
Right. Which it goes back to something that we have said several times. When is there going to be consequences for this crap?
Lord.
At some point there's got to be. Or this is never going to stop.
It will stop when we say, I don't think I will. As a group of people drawing a line in the sand and said enough's enough. Yeah. But until then, your compliance gives them power.
Yeah. Well, that's because what they do is they threaten you with your livelihood.
Of course they do. What else do they got?
They don't. So, I guess this time around, we don't have to blame the gun. We can blame the ATF.